had a lot to do with the Emmett had only one donkey.
Yeah.
Who was here when he said that? Was that talking about, you know,
yeah.
about pay? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that rancor over a small amount, but it becomes a significant sort of thing. It sort of gets some sort of meanness of spirit. I mean, it's hard to separate the thrift.
Yeah, that's right.
At one point, it gets down to that, and then. It was a very divisive period, I'm sure, and it took a while to heal. Do you think after he was, the trial was over and everything, then there was a healing period? But it
took a good long while.
It took a good while.
It did take a good long while. Some people left as a result, I think.
Yeah.
Against
her
feeling.
As soon as
she left,
Mike
Raw,
I
forgot the name.
Oh, yeah, Miss Bliss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I didn't know
the name of the trial. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But she felt very traumatic, and she had to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She felt, you know, a lot of people were ugly than her, so she kissed her. I mean, same way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure some people said, although I never did hear it, it's probably never did hear, but I'm sure a lot of people felt that way about it.
Is this recorder on?
No, what I've been...
Yeah,
now he did not get along so well. What was the problem, you reckon, he left?
Well, it's very interesting. He had taught college and university. He had taught administration at George Peabody College for years and years, but he had never had any practical experience. He came here thinking that everything was supposed to go according to the book, you know. And of course, it was a difficult period with divisions in the faculty and a lot of backbiting and so forth going on over the Meadows affair. And the man was simply overcome. I mean, he said to me one time, he said, I never knew that one institution could have this many problems. I just don't see how any institution could have as many problems as this man has.
How about that?
he just couldn't take it. It would have been difficult for any person, but for a person that had never had any experience in college administration. It was just
overwhelming. I heard some stories that are delightful. that he did have lacked a sense of humor, which would have been very helpful.
Right.
He was very calm.
He saw a joke that he thought was a good joke, and he'd write it down, and then when he went to make a speech somewhere, he'd say he had a joke, so he'd get the last piece of paper and read the joke. So you can imagine how funny that was.
He read somewhere administrators should tell jokes,
yeah.
I suspect.
Now I tell a joke.
That was a joke.
Yeah, I remember one time I went with him to Wilson. Had an alumni meeting up there, and picnic out someplace, you know, the outside was. It wasn't in the country club, but it was somewhere. And he made a talk. Of course, he was the main speaker, so to speak. And he had his jokes written out. And of course, they all fell flat. But he didn't have any sense of humor. God knows anybody else coming in that situation needed sense of humor.
He certainly did. He was not even inaugurated, I believe.
I guess he was.
Before the first year was out, and then Dr. Messick And I had a delightful visit with him in June. I went down to.
I'll tell you one thing about Dr. Cook while mm-hmm. we're on the subject. He really, it's a little thing, but I just happened to recall it. When he submitted his resignation to the Board of Trustees, which caught them entirely by, took everybody by surprise, mm-hmm. he had been, he resigned to become head of the Department of Education at UNC Greensboro. And he said that in his statement, that he read a statement of resignation, a letter of resignation, he said he was resigning, he had to take on greater responsibility, outstanding institution. And that really burned, burned him up. That he was going to be here to Greensboro, head of the department, head of a department which was greater responsibility and more outstanding than being the president. Yeah.
That wouldn't have. I think maybe lacks a little tact as well.
He should have just said, "Well, I found it. This isn't my piece of pie. I'm going somewhere else."
Going back to the classroom.
Yeah.
Right.
Not try to put it across as a promotion. Excuse me, that's all I had to say.
No, that's delightful. It's too distinctive of the I guess too, it's post-war era and a lot of changes and a lot of problems and that were coming. And all of this time, I guess your responsibilities were increasing as far as what all was, came under the umbrella.
Yeah, and of course it had a succession of presidents who were new and of course needed assistance, which I was maybe able to help.
Well, you, it seems to me, were in such a significant position of continuity with those matters that are so essential, I mean, in running and continuing, that at least they had the continuity with out of your office.
That's right.
Which was tremendous. You know, when you get right down to it, if you have some very good people running the real core, you know, you can do day-to-day, you can do fine having a good, stable.
Did they have an interim between Cook and Mexico? Did Mexico come in after Cook?
No, I believe he was out.
Maybe Cook gave enough notice so that they...
No, I don't know. There must have been, I just don't remember.
I don't think there was a very long period.
There wasn't a long period.
Between
there may not have been any lapse at all in there.
I believe he sort of announced in the summer they had him in here by fall.
Yeah, he's Dr. Meskey.
Picked up the ball, as they say, and it's more I read and study on this, it seems to me that it was under Dr. Messick that so much began to move.
Yes.
During, as they say, an economic that took off period with Dr. Messick's role in the 50s. Of course, that was a booming period.
Yes.
In general, with the GI Bill and really converted the school to a co-ed. And then before I get completely away from this, you said that after Dr. Mehta resigned, they reorganized the system so that student funds and all of that are operated. I mean, were reorganized to be under the direction.
Well, I was, I think, as I recall it, the student fund is collected and was collected by the business office, but then it was turned over just
to the student.
To the student budget office, and they had student officers and faculty advisors, and so
it was not really turned over to under your operation, but to the students.
That's right.
That's what is there something that's rather unusual. And in East Carolina, that the students have more control over their funds than in most places.
That's right. Yeah.
And that dates from the reorganization after Dr. Mehta's resignation. That's how that came about.
I never had or wanted to have any responsibility for the disbursement.
Yeah.
For the actual expenditure of the funds, other than this, that I acted in an advisory capacity, and I had something to do with having the funds audited.
Well, did they have stay out of this?
No, they had
private.
But it was turned over more to the control. Well, the students also got sort of backing up again a little bit. They were also involved in this problem in the
I don't remember too much about that, but I'm sure that they were.
I that's another one. Kind of hard to trace the students. I've been trying to locate them up here that were involved and might be able to. Now, I've got the phone number, but can't find her at home. Because I know that there was that aspect of it too. The students and then with Dr. Messick, your duties took on ever more responsibility. Yeah. Your office assumed more and more.
Yes.
The building program.
Of course, there had been a period from the time I came here in 1936 until World War II was over. I guess the only building that was erected was the Flanagan Building. That was built with WPA, with help from WPA, as a combination state and WPA funds, right after World War II. And then there was a period, I wouldn't know how many years, but it must have been 15 years or more that there's practically no expansion of the physical plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after World War II, when students, particularly men students, started coming in here, well, they just, we needed additional facilities, and the state had, of course, had accumulated a lot of money, and the state appropriated a lot of money, and we took off buildings and acquiring more land and all that sort of thing.
And all that came into your
domain.
That would seem to me during the 50s was about a full-time job in itself.
Yeah, it was.
The building. And you had charge of what, letting the whole business of the contract?
The planning in conjunction with the people who were going to use the building.
Mm-hmm.
But in most instances, I employed the architects, or I always said to the president, Dr. Messick or Dr. James, I think it would be a good idea to get Carter Williams or A.G. O'Dell and Company in Charlotte, or Carter Williams and Raleigh, or Jason Page and Associates and all, as the architects on this building. And they said, yeah, I think so. And then from that point, by the planning of the building, generally, it was done by the people who were going to occupy the building, and with my being in the opinion on it too.
They would say what they needed and how, yeah, how it should.
And they actually, as long as it met certain criteria, they actually conferred with the architect, told them what they needed, and that sort of thing. We had to stay within a certain number of square feet, and we had to stay within a certain number of dollars, but that was sort of thing. And of course, George Poe, when I left, when I retired from university in 1970, I had a map of the campus. At that time, I had sort of a pictorial map of the campus and the buildings. And I checked them out and found that over half the buildings on the campus had been built while I was there.
I was going to say, it'll look good, Lena.
And there have been many buildings built since, not so many buildings since then. There were either most of the buildings that have been built since were in the planning stage or in the construction stage.
Before you retired. Yeah, you were the builder. And that is it. Really is a full-time job.
Yeah.
And,
of course, Jim Lowry, you probably know him.
Yeah, man.
He was the one that got out from day to day and visited the buildings and so forth and so on. I did it in the earlier years, but after he came with us, he did most of that. But you may be interested in knowing this. When I hope I'm not dragging this out longer than one more time.
I'm fascinated.
When I came here, and this had nothing to do with what I did or what it meant, but it just shows the status of things. The 10th Street was at a dead end right up there about where's that hamburger place up there, Wendy's.
Oh.
That's as far as 10th Street went. There was nothing down here. That long about where the music building is was the hog pasture. And that's where they kept the hogs and slaughtered them.
I didn't know that.
For use in the dining room. And there's a field of several acres of land in there about where the psychology nursing school building is and the Austin building and in that area that was planted in crop and corn, maybe supposed to feed the hogs, I guess. Well, as soon as I could, I got rid of that
operation.
And then university did not, the college did not own any property in it beyond what is now 10th Street. And the area down there about where the maintenance shop is, and was the dog pasture. Dr. Mellon was a great person, and so were some of the other people in there, Dr. Browning and Dr. Quicklesheimer. I believe it was Henderson, maybe he was. And they owned lots of bird dogs, and that's where they kept them. And they got scraps. They had somebody employed to take the scraps from the dining room and feed the dogs.
Well, that was just really country out there then.
Yeah,
the whole,
it was country.
The whole area. Did you all live here?
No, this had been developed later. Extended 10th Street now. which they did not. We bought this lot to see a doctor who is dead now, Dr. Anita Ward, and I used to play golf together. And one day he said to me, he said, Marvin Blunt and Conlon here are starting a new development over across from this new street, new 10th Street down there. Just been. I said, we said, let's buy a lot over there and build a house.
The bridge didn't have a bridge there.
Just the spring was there.
If you came in here, you had to go all the way around.
Is that right? I don't remember that question. It wasn't long. Well, I guess you're right, but it wasn't long before we put it in. But anyway, That's the reason his house, which is this one over here, and this house, the first house is built here. Of course, Marvin Blunt's house, big house down here, his was started about the same time, within a month or two after ours was started, but his being a big house, lighter getting. One time, people say to me, say, what in the world do you want to move way out there for? I wouldn't think about staying out there.
Out there in the country.
I remember Need and Liv Ward moved in about a week, 10 days before we did. And the house finished about a week before I arrived. About the second day, but the first day of the night, the first night out here, Liv called, Dr. Ward's wife called Liv. She said, I wish you all heard and get out of here. I said, it's too lonesome out here with all the owls and the animals at night. And said, one other thing, now I get off of that. I said, we had a full-time maid back then, as most people did. The wages were about $4 a week. So, but people don't have maids like that now. But we had this girl that lived out here about a mile out. Was really out in the country, came in. And one day somebody called Liv and said, may I speak to this doctor? And she said, she ain't here, she's gone to Greenville.
That is the life.
I don't know what year the person, the property acquired by the university after I came here, which is after World War II, this first property that was acquired was this about 90 acres of land from the barbers. It was this oldest land where the boys' dormitories is that we here.
That was
from 10th Street to 14th. I mean, from 10th Street to 14th Street. Yeah.
After Dr. Messick came.
That's right.
And the building.
That's right.
Program. Just wish they'd bought the. It's so hard to visualize what will.
Later we bought this property over here where the Coliseum and the stadium and so forth. That was farmland over there, and except part of it was swamp. And we spent a good deal of money grading and draining. Getting it all down there, especially between the Coliseum and Charles Street. What did you start saying, Liv?
I don't think there was anything of big importance, but those years right after when you was all over everywhere buying surplus property.
Yeah.
But that involved anything, you know, after the government was selling off all this stuff and.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
I remember one time
you
went somewhere you bought all new steel equipment for the cafeteria.
You mean go off to where the army or the
government
had
bases, Navy bases,
or
army bases or somewhere.
Yeah,
about
circle
stuff.
And that was all your
domain
as well.
We had the North cafeteria and the South cafeteria. We had when they converted them from dining room service to cafeteria service. Of course, you couldn't buy cafeteria counters and all this stainless steel business immediately after World War II because it hadn't been manufactured, but by that time the government was selling. I remember I went to North and to Williamsburg and another trip about most all the cafeteria, these little fine stainless steel cafeteria counters.
Relatively cheap, I guess.
Very cheap, very cheap. But anyway, that's not worth that's
well, it's factor, interesting, the whole, that you have, really, the whole physical part of the university is very much a reflection of your work.
Well, yes.
And the half of the buildings on the campus or more, and the whole expansion and the whole.
Since I've been retired, of course, the the art building was just in the planning stage. And what's that building that John Gray Edmond Row is?
Out of Hell.
Out of the Hell building was.
It was in the planning stage.
It was in the planning stage. I don't believe it began construction on it, but.
Had music been finished?
Music. Oh, yeah, that had been finished. The addition to the library had been started. It was in the building stage. And of course, the student union was in the planning stage.
Sam was still holding it up, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There was a lot over there on at the end of 9th Street.
8th Street.
End of 8th that belonged to Sam Unwin. Sam Unwin was a lawyer who lived, is a good friend of ours, lived right down the street. His mother had lived in that house. And they needed that little tract of land, but he went from one, you know, legal maneuver to another legal maneuver to another legal maneuver, held him up, I don't know how many years.
And then what did he finally decide to? Well,
it came down to the end. Of course, the state had had eminent domain and was able to condemn it. But if a lawyer, being a lawyer and also the owner, he was able to get a lot of delay, you know.
Appeal this, postpone
for this reason or other, and then postpone again for another reason. Then when this court ruled on it, he could appeal it to a higher court. All of that takes time.
Well, did he want it for living purposes?
Well, for renting purposes.
It's just for renting, but...
He was in a... I can see his... I mean, I don't... I'm not in agreement at all with his tactics, but I can see his point of view when... right about the end of World War II, he called me and said, but he called me and says, my mother is, his mother was living in his house then, she was not able to live in her house, was vacant. He said, I have that property, my mother's property there, and the university ought to have it, and can you buy it, or will you buy it? And I said, well, Sam, we need it. We ought to have it. But the state is not appropriating any money now for the purchase of land, and we don't have any money for it, and there's no way we can get any money for it. And he said, well, if the college is not going to buy it, I'm going to spend money on it and modernize it and rent it. And I said, well, that's up to you. We ought to have it. And I hope someday we can get it, but I don't know when that'll be. And so he spent it, and it wasn't but 2 or 3 years till we were able to buy it. Of course, he was highly resentful. And to some extent, I think resentful toward me personally. I don't
you couldn't
know
control.
that he had been allowed to spend the money to do that, and but it didn't last too long. I mean, as far as personal resentment was concerned, and after a while, we finally got the land. Of course, we started out just to only stay the way the state would appropriate money was if you had an immediate need for the property. And we had immediate need for, and there was a lot of elderly people lived over there. They lived, I mean, in that area. They lived there for years. And there were a lot of broken hearts and resentment and pathetic situations. And I don't know that there was any this. Not too much enmity, I don't think. But after that time, I think it was sort of a lesson to everybody concerned, and the state then started making money available for long-range acquisition of property.
As it became available?
And even before I left over there, we were allowed to elderly couple died and money, I mean, there's nobody. We could go in and say, well, we don't need this. We could go in and buy the property. Mm-hmm. Even though we had no immediate need for it, we didn't have the money to put a building there. But we could buy the property and hold it for the future. And I understand that they're still doing that. They even acquired some property over on the ninth.
Well, it's so wise. I mean, if you don't do it now, you never will. Or it'll cost to be prohibitive if they do that. I would hope they could buy all of that eventually.
Yeah.
And, I guess that's fair. I live on Maple, and there was at one point a rumor that they
coming that way.
Yeah.
Shady Lane.
Yeah, they probably
Shady Lane all that.
Yeah, everybody was
nervous.
But I thought, I'm glad they went that way.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you one thing. As we're talking about all the buildings, and I've become so interested in some of the old ones. About Old Austin, was that a decision from the state that we had to tear that down, or was that
a decision?
Declining.
It was. I never had any particular sentimental attachment for Austin, although I was here for a good many years before it was torn down. But there were a lot of people that had a lot of sentimental attachment to it. But it was a fire trap, and it was terribly in a bad state of repair, and it just wasn't much you could do to repair it. It was built when all it was wood construction. Four stories, and it had some classrooms up on the fourth floor. And Lord knows if a fire had broken out on the first floor, it would have been a terrible situation.
I have been noticing pictures. I came in 67, and the building wasn't torn down till 68, but I cannot remember it. I don't know why. I just blank when it. And I can remember the blank over there, but I do not remember that as I've been looking at a lot of old pictures. And it really grew. At first, it wasn't nearly as massive.
No, it was built in, I think in three parts.
Mm-hmm. But this, before it was torn down, didn't you have an estimate on revamping that or building a new one or something? Seems to me you did.
When the Voice of America came here, this is you.
Cut that off.
Okay. The Voice of America.